And you are in tune to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA. I'm Cheryl Kay, fill-in host of The Morning Show. And this morning we have a guest. Who are you? Oh, wait a minute. No one's going to hear you unless the mic's up. Let's try that.
All right. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
My name is Chris Moyer, but before I go into all that, I can't thank you enough for bringing us out here today. Thank you so much.
Well, it's the least I could do. You gave me a few drinks this weekend. I'm such a cheap date.
Right.
Chris is one of the co-owners of the Hudson Valley Distillers, which is located at 1727 Route 9 in Claremont.
Claremont, that's
correct. Yeah, yeah. This weekend, they had an open house, which, of course, I attended. But, you know, I've been watching that spot for over a year. And then I saw the sign, you know, we're opening in 2014. I'm like waiting. I'm like, oh, great. The tasting room's open.
Right.
So I just happened to come on Friday and find out that you were having an open house. So let's talk about you, the other owners, and how the open house went.
Sure. Well, you know, I joke with people that this thing all started in a laundromat because of a duffel bag. And I know that's a weird way to start. I say a distillery started, but my business partner, Tom, this was at Bloomsburg University probably 25 years ago. My business partner was in a laundromat doing his laundry with a military duffel bag at the time. I was in the military as well. And I said, hey, are you a military guy? And, of course, you know, 25 years later, here we are.
25 years.
Yeah, 25 years. I know, that's crazy. We eventually became fraternity brothers there in at Bloomsburg University, and I ended up going to Germany after I got out of college and came back. We both started families. Of course, I married my wife Jennifer, and he married his lovely wife Jennifer as well.
That's Jennifer. Jennifer.
I know, it's just a coincidence. But in any case, over the years, we started to vacation together, and inevitably, we'd sit over a campfire, and Tom was a police officer and said, well, when I retire, I want to, you know, we talked about all kinds of crazy things, a bison farm, a golf course, a campground. You know, we both want to do something with our hands, something tangible. And then one time, a distillery came up. It stuck. And in 2012, I moved my family from Northern Virginia. In the summer of 2013, we bought the farm and the barn that you saw.
Mm-hmm.
Started to renovate it while we were both working full-time. And then in January 2014, Tom retired from the Newburgh Police Department. Moved up here, and that's where we are.
Wow. So when did you acquire your taste for hard liquor? I'm... My family's Jamaican, so I remember rum all the time at, not the dinner table, but when the men of the family got together in the afternoon, Sunday
sure.
afternoon, they'd sit down and they'd have the ginger ale, and they'd have the 180 proof rum.
Oh, wow.
It was serious. I mean, they never like staggered in and out, you know, of the
sure,
kitchen or anything,
sure.
But the women were sure to bring them lots of food, so it all got absorbed.
You bet. Yeah, that's funny. You know, another thing I joke about is I'm probably the only Mennonite owner of a distillery in the country. Talk about alcohol and, you know, family life and everything. No, so really, it really happened, I think, for all of us when Tom and actually the other three principals in this, Tom, Jennifer, and Jennifer, are all gluten-free. And so that kind of happened a couple years ago. And so most of them moved away from beer, particularly Tom,
right.
And moved really into drinking things like vodka and whiskey and that sort of thing. So that was part of, you know, in a strange way, them having to go gluten-free precipitated this whole move into this distillery. But... yeah, you know, I like everything. I like beer, wine, and I do, in the last couple of years, I have worked hard to learn to taste and smell the subtleties of different mm-hmm. types of liquor, and that's been an education for me.
Yeah. Now, did you ever consider a winery? Because wineries, you know, they're kind of big up here, but I know
yeah.
that distilleries are starting to pick up in New York State.
They are, yeah, and... you know, my wife would have very much preferred a winery in the beginning. We talked about that, and, you know, we started this thing on a shoestring. You mentioned earlier that you saw the barn and the sign and everything. Well, you know, the delay in opening this was because it was the four of us and family and friends actually doing all the work to get this thing up to where it needed to be. And we felt like a winery was just more expense than we could take on.
Yeah, and it seems you have some strong little bodies there. Those kids were great.
They are good.
They were there. The children were there. You know, they were there making popcorn and slushies. Oh, and that smoker. Where did you steal that from?
Yeah, that's a great question. at one point, Tom was working with Orange County Choppers. They're based down in Newburgh, and so he's friends with a lot of guys down there, and they've been fantastic to us. They've done some metal work for us and just been great, but they have this big cooker. And when Tom described, I mean, we're on radio, we can't show any pictures of Tom.
Oh, it was huge.
When Tom described this thing, he said, hey, I need your truck to go in and pick up the cooker. And he brings it back, and it's got, you know, scrolls of fire on it, and the vents to let the smoke out are actually look like chopper pipes.
All it needed was wheels.
That's right. But yeah, that's the connection with Orange County Choppers, and those guys have been fantastic to us in helping to start this thing.
Well, they made a terrific pork that day.
Yeah.
It was really nice. So I wanted to know, where did you come up with the name Spirits Grove Farm?
Yeah, that's actually another great question. I'm glad you asked that. You were there, and I think you saw that there's sort of a grove of pine trees in that corner where mm-hmm. the orchard kind of wraps around
yep.
there. And, you know, when we bought the place, it was called a nursery or something like that. We wanted to put our own name on it. And so there was this grove of pine trees. And, of course, there's that kind of play on words with spirits. And right, exactly. And we thought it looked kind of like a mystical place, and so it really just fit to combine all those things and call it, you know, Spirits Grove.
Yeah. Now, is the whole property 4 acres, or is just where the apples are?
Oh, just the apples.
Just the apples.
The whole farm is 12 acres.
12 acres.
4 acres in apples. There's probably another, like, 3 acres that we could plant things. And, of mm-hmm. course, I'm not sure how much we got into this when you were there, but our plans are to stuff every inch of that property full of not so much base ingredients, but things that can augment. Like, for instance, we want to make a gin, and of course mm-hmm. gin relies on juniper berries. Well, junipers grow here naturally, and so our plan is to grow some junipers so that we can source our own botanicals right from the mm-hmm. farm to make flavorings for our spirits.
Yeah. So apples play an important part in the drinks that you make. You want to talk about that process and some of the products that you have.
You bet. So everything that we make is from apples, believe it or not. And, of course, to make liquor, any type of alcohol, you need sugar. And the great thing about apples is that they have plenty of sugar. And I got a funny story. I sat in a bar one time with a bar manager, and I said, yeah, we make vodka from apples. And she argued with me for about 15 minutes that you can't make alcohol from apples.
So, what does she know?
She doesn't know anything. But but yeah, at this point, everything we make is from apples, and the process is really rather simple. We get about 250 gallons of fresh pressed cider every week. And we get that delivered to the distillery, and immediately we put yeast into it. And then yeast does its job. The yeast consumes the sugar, and a byproduct of that is alcohol and CO2. After about 3 weeks, we have a hard cider. I mean, you saw the tanks in there. You could take that out and drink it the way it is. But in those 250 gallons of cider that we get per week, there's roughly something like 15 gallons of pure alcohol.
Huh. Okay.
And so for us as distillers, we need to take that hard cider and extract or distill that alcohol out of there. So we put that into our still. We heat the still up to in between the boiling point of water and the boiling point of alcohol. Turns the alcohol into vapor. And then you saw that we have all those different columns, and we can do with it what we mm-hmm. want, either make vodka or something that we call Applejack.
And everything is bottled on the premise.
Bottled on premise. If we're making vodka, there it is. If we're making vodka, we mix water back in to get to 80 proof because it comes off of still at about 190 proof.
All right.
Yeah, that's the
that's real, what I'm talking about.
That's the real stuff. If it's vodka, we mix that water right back in, and we bottle it. If it's an Applejack, we age it in barrels like you would age a whiskey. And after that's ready, pull that out, mix a little water into it to get it to the right proof, and then we bottle it right there on site by hand.
Okay. So name the what you have there. You have...
Yeah, you bet. We've got three spirits right now, and that was the reason for the launch party this weekend that was launching those three products. And it's Adirondack Applejack, Spirits Grove Vodka, and Hardscrabble Applejack.
Yes. And I'm looking right at these at their website, which is HudsonValleyDistillers.com. You're open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 12 to 6.
That's right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Now, are you going to be open this Friday?
We are.
You are?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, earlier you said the length of today is 15 hours and 11 minutes.
Yeah.
I think we work, every one of those 15 hours and 11 minutes at the distillery, one of us doing something. So, yeah, we're going to be open this weekend, and we'd love to see people come out.
Yeah. And you can like them on Facebook. They do Twitter. Now, where can we – and also on this page, you have places where people can buy it.
Yeah, yes. They're,
you're getting around.
We're trying. You know, there's a lot of regulatory hurdles to get past. And as of June, we were allowed to sell to liquor stores and bars. And so we're doing our best to kind of radiate out from from the farm.
Cool. All right, what we're going to do is take a little break. Did you bring music?
I did not.
Oh, you got to depend on me, the DJ, for music?
That's
fine.
Right.
All right.
I could sing maybe, but I'm just kidding. You wouldn't want to hear that.
Hold off on that. All right. All right, we're going to take a break here on WGXC. Yeah, we've got Mystic Brew in the background.
Good.
Very appropriate. I'm Cheryl Kay, fill-in host on The Morning Show. It is now 24 minutes past 9 o'clock. My guest this morning is Chris Moyer. He's one of the owners and operators of Hudson Valley Distillers, located in Claremont on Route 9. Diagonally kind of across from Tossie Wines.
About 300 yards away, yep.
Yeah, so folks, you can do it all. Get all of your libations in a couple of, you know, within a couple of feet of each other. So, Chris, you want to throw some stats at us about distillers?
I do. Yeah, some of the things that we tell people that come in, and they're usually very fascinated about this, is that New York has the third highest number of distilleries by state in the country. Only eclipsed by, I think it's Oregon and Washington.
Yeah.
And, it's really fascinating what's happening in the distilling industry right now. Up until a couple years ago, and these are sort of general numbers, right? Don't hold me to the exacts. But up until a couple years ago, there was only something like 90 distilleries in the entire country. And almost every one of them was, you know,
that's
large.
Less than one per state.
I know. This industry, after Prohibition, was really the only ones that could come back and meet all the regulatory requirements and the laws and the taxation and everything are large businesses.
Mm.
And I think what happened is a couple years ago, the states started to recognize that wineries were making them money. And back in the 80s, they made home brewing of beer legal. Used to be illegal before that.
Right.
Distilling is still illegal, by the way. So home distillation is still illegal. But I think what happened is we've got this massive, and there's charts and graphs on all this massive explosion of breweries since the 80s when they repealed the laws on home brewing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's more breweries today than there was during Prohibition. And so
that's good news.
That's great news. But what that's done really is two things. Small breweries tend to buy more locally than the large breweries. When you buy locally and when you buy small, you're going to have variation in your products.
Right.
Whereas if you're a large brewery or distillery for that matter, and you have differences between one batch of bottles to the next, your consumers don't like that. On the other hand, if you're small and innovative and craft, and you have differences between bottles or batches, it's almost a celebration, right? Oh, this one is like this one's like that. And so, but in any case, I think the states and the federal government recognized the type of money, not only from tourism, but from agriculture, that these small breweries and wineries generate.
Mm.
And so just a couple of years ago, some states, New York being one of them, started to relax the laws to get distilling permits to small people like us. And so jumping back for a second to the brewing industry, you know, a number of years ago when I first became legal to drink, I'd walk into to a beer store and every beer was kind of the same. Yeah, granted, there was a bunch of national manufacturers and there were some regional guys, but a lot of the beers were the same. Ugh. When you start getting the small guys into this, you walk into a beer store now, there's probably, I don't know, 30 different kinds of beers and
Know, 30 plus.
Who knows? 50 maybe. But I think that's going to, I think you're going to see that happen in the distilling industry as well. And I think that's good for choice, right? If the, what you see in the liquor store right now, I think in 10 years, you're going to see double that in terms of the variations of products. And I think that's good for consumers.
I think so too. And one of the people who I saw at the open house this weekend was Chris Gibson.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's a good reason for him being there. I had a short discussion with him, and you know, what he's telling me is that in his district, agriculture is the biggest industry. And something about the, I said a minute ago that New York relaxed the laws to get permits. One of the stipulations for this relaxed permit is that we're called a farm distillery. Doesn't mean we're a farm. Now, we have the orchard there, and we do, you know, farming. But we have to source 75% of our ingredients from the state of New York. And so and that's why I say this really benefits everybody. It benefits the consumer. It benefits New York State agriculture. Mm-hmm. And obviously it benefits the small business owners like me and Tom and right. Jennifer and Jennifer, because we can start these new innovative businesses. Yeah. But, you know, the whole thing behind doing this was that we could drive agriculture, and in our case, local agriculture in the state of New York.
Yeah, and U.S. Representative Chris Gibson is very much behind this. He's a frequent flyer here at WGXC, so you know he's cool. I like him.
Yeah,
yeah. So let me ask you this about. I remember, you know, by the way, Jennifer and crew, you all had your lines down perfectly.
Yeah,
she was nervous. She was saying, you know, days before they were all trying, you were all trying to remember what to say, how
absolutely,
to say it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
She was flawless.
Good. Good.
And she talked about the converts, getting people to like your vodka. And what I mean by that, and I'll take it as one, 'cause I'm, you know, I like alcohol, but alcohol doesn't like me.
Sure,
I can't drink
sure.
a lot.
Yeah.
And I've started recently trying different vodkas, and some are okay. You know, they're kind of smooth, and some are like, you know, they taste like turpentine.
Sure.
But
sure.
in trying yours, I mean, she described it perfectly as I was drinking. It was really smooth. It had a really pleasant smell. It went down so well. Of course, I just went.
You bet. You bet.
Yeah, I got to learn to sip.
Right,
I don't sip.
Right.
I just go.
Right.
So how do you bring people in to drinking your stuff?
Sure. Well, first I've got to give credit to my partner Tom. He is the creative side of this, the distilling side. I handle a little bit more of the business side. So
someone's got to.
Yeah, absolutely. But I give credit to him. When we started this, we actually had discussions about this. Did we want to make a what I would call sort of a bland or a generic vodka, which is what most mass market vodkas are? And the benefit of that is that they mix with everything, right? Because they're relatively bland. And Tom was really adamant that he wanted to have something that was unique.
Drinkable?
And well, not only that, but had just an essence of mm-hmm. Of what we made the product from. In this case, it's apples. And so, you know, No, but most of the vodkas out there are made from corn, because corn gives you the biggest bang for your buck in generating alcohol. Hmm. But no one takes corn and you know, mixes up the little kernels and puts it into a glass of water and says, that's tasty, right? But we do. We drink all kinds of apple products. There's cider. There's apple juice. You know, in our case, there's apple. There's vodka made from apples. There's hard cider. And so we wanted to keep just a little bit of that goodness in the vodka. Mm-hmm. Now, the drawback for that is that because we have a little bit of flavor, because it's unique, it doesn't mix with as many things as a generic mass market vodka. But that's what we wanted to do. And that's what I was talking about just a second ago, is that, you know, small distilleries can innovate and do new things. And we've got something that's pretty unique, I think.
So vodka and a meal. What's good to drink with your vodka?
Oh, jeez.
What's good to eat? What's good to eat with your vodka?
You know,
some suggestions.
Boy, that's a that's a good question, and I don't think that's a question that anybody's asked me before.
You guys got to get on that.
I think you kind of stumped me on that one.
It'll just take some sitting down and experimenting, glass after glass.
That's right. You know, I do need to go back to the team and say, hey, I got stumped on this, and now we need to sit down and do some market research. That's the best part of the business.
Yeah.
Good question. You stumped me on that one. I will say, though, that I think the favorite drink that we make from this vodka is something called a Moscow Mule. And we adapted it for being in the Hudson Valley. We call it a Hudson Appaloosa. And in any case, it's just vodka, just one slice of lime that you crush and put in, and then you top with ginger beer, a good quality, real ginger beer. And that is just a fantastic, smooth, nice summer drinkable drink.
Folks, it's that time of year. It's the 4th of July. Treat yourself and go out, get some libations, bring it to the guests. They'll love you for it. The Hudson Valley Distillers, located at 1727 Route 9 in Claremont. Their website is HudsonValleyDistillers.com. Their telephone number is area code 518-537-6820. And, of course, if you didn't get all that, you can always call me later and I'll give you all that stuff. But this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday you're open?
You bet.
From noon to 6.
That's right.
A good time will be had by all, 21 and over.
That's correct.
What do you have for the kids when they come in?
Well, you know, we've got a lot of open space out there. Unfortunately, we don't.
Oh, yeah, throw them out there to run around.
We don't have the we don't have the face painting and popcorn and snow cones every weekend like we did this past weekend. But I tell you what, there's 3 or 4 acres of wide open grass field. Those kids can go out and go crazy out there.
Awesome, awesome. All right, any last words that you'd like to, I don't know, tell us about?
No, just once again, I can't thank you enough for coming out. And I got to tell you, when we started this thing, we were just overwhelmed by local people. And we knew we were going to focus on local people. But I mean, you know, people from Hudson and Claremont and Rhinebeck and Red Hook, and just the reaction from local people coming out and saying, hey, I want to support you. Just been overwhelming.
We're not going to survive unless we support each other. You know what I'm saying?
You bet.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I want to thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
And I think, let's see, do I have this or did I kill it? I had something propped up here. All right. I'm going to put on some more music and then we'll get to something else. I'm sure I will.
Okay.
But thanks for coming in.
All right. Thank you.